Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
What kind of a show are you guys putting on here today?
You're not interested in art?
No.
Now look, we're going to do this thing. We're going to have a conversation.
From Chicago, this is Film Spotting. I'm Adam Kempinar.
And I'm Michael Phillips.
This isn't the first time I've been mistaken for Ryan Reynolds, but it's getting out of hand. Ryan, obviously there's been some kind of mistake.
Ryan Gosling accepting his Best Actor Golden Globe in January. When Reynolds was one of his fellow nominees in the musical or comedy category, Gosling will have to come up with another line if he accepts an Oscar for his performance in La La Land.
How about, this isn't the first time I've been mistaken for a less hairy Casey Affleck?
Yeah. That works for me.
That works for me.
This week, it's our own big Oscar show. Michael and I will make our picks for who will win, who should win, and who got unfairly overlooked this Oscar season. It's all ahead.
A more handsome Andrew Garfield.
On Film Spotting.
A shorter Jeff Goldblum.
Michael Phillips from the Chicago Tribune is in this week. Josh is out sick, Michael,
sick.
Though, yeah, I think he's actually just trying to get out of talking about the Oscars.
Well, and there is a lot of crud going around. I mean, I think the first half hour of, you know, we're fighting it in our house. I don't know about you, but I think the first half hour of this taping, Adam, I'm going to sound a little bit like Bing Crosby, but then by the end, it'll be a little more like Elaine Stritch.
Perfect.
So it's going to be that's my duo tonight.
Okay, well, yeah. We have that to look forward to. We did think that we were finally done with 2016. Last week on the show, we got to a couple 2017 movies, John Wick 2, which, Michael, you were correct about. You were underwhelmed.
Underwhelmed, okay.
As I was.
Okay.
Yeah.
But
okay.
The first one was
first
for
one.
What it was, but better.
Much better. The Lego Batman movie, Josh and I really liked. I don't know how you felt about that.
I was a little
that.
Less so. Am I just in some sort of 2.5-star haze? Is that my problem?
Well, it's a problem.
It's a problem.
Because it's a much better film than that.
Well, you know, we could go back in time and I could be here saying, you guys are stupid. You're stupid. You're wrong. That's a hackneyed point you're making.
Uh-huh.
But no, you know what? I'm going to give that one another look.
Okay.
I really loved the Lego movie, and it may just have been too high in expectations.
Maybe so.
I try to bring in the lowest possible expectations to everything.
Yeah.
Every move I make.
That's a good approach.
Yep.
As you walk into the studio tonight to tape this show, I think it's a very good approach. We are talking about La La Land and Moonlight somehow again, and I'm guessing we're going to get in a few other very good 2016 titles as well. The way this is going to work is we are going to look at the big six categories, the four acting categories, best picture, best director.
Right.
We'll go through, we'll talk about who will win,
yep.
Who should win,
yes.
And then we'll share a few names who maybe should have been nominated.
Okay, I like it.
Instead.
Yes.
Now, I don't know about you, but any Oscar punditry or prognostication I pick up almost completely by accident. It's not something I really pay attention to. I'm wondering if in your role with the Tribune, are you required to pick up on that stuff a little bit more?
Well, the hilarious thing about the Tribune is that we've gotten in this horrible habit/tradition the last few years of I actually have to commit my first round of predictions about 2 hours after the nominations come out.
Really?
So, and then of course, you know, I modify like the Dow, you know, I go up, I go down, I change names, you know, by the end, then half the time, you know, I make too many changes in the ultimate predictions and suddenly I would have been correct sticking with them. But, you know, so it's all, you know, it all makes me just sick to my stomach to reduce the fine art of acting and the lovely craft of cinematography and direction and just the magic of motion pictures to a bunch of damn betting, you know, but, I'm a sucker for it like everybody else.
So as of the night here we are taping the show, has that bit of prognostication on your part already been published, or is that coming out soon?
I've definitely published one round of it right away, and then I think this Sunday we're going to have kind of my final, this is it, folks. Mm-hmm. So, you know, you'll get a little taste of it.
Okay. Right. Well, let's get another taste of it right now as we start with Best Actor in a Supporting Role. The nominees are Mahershala Ali for Moonlight, Jeff Bridges, Hell or High Water, Lucas Hedges, Manchester by the Sea, Dev Patel in Lion, and Michael Shannon, Nocturnal Animals. I have to confess, one of the two categories we're going to cover where I haven't seen one of the nominees, and I love Michael Shannon.
Yes.
But somehow I have still not caught up with Nocturnal Animals.
Well.
So I can't weigh
in. Life is busy, right?
It is.
It's a busy life.
It's very, very busy.
And we only got one of them. One life to live.
True.
And you can't always see all, even if you're hosting a show on the
That's
subject,
right.
You might actually slough off enough to actually skip one of the... Yeah.
I did, but I did a little bit of work in preparation for this show, Michael. I'll have you know, I had already seen Moonlight, Hell or High Water, Manchester by the Sea. Lion was one of those films that Josh and I talked about this recently on the show. I heard nothing but pretty good things about it, pretty good to very good.
Right.
But knowing vaguely what it was about, and I hadn't read anything, and I didn't want to know any more than I usually try not to know going into a movie, but I knew that it was about a young boy
right.
in India getting separated from his family, and I could not, despite having an award screener at home
just
for the past like 3 months, every night for 3 months that I approached my DVD player, I just could not bring myself to put it in. It
right.
just seemed too heavy and too depressing. So what I did, I actually had an afternoon free last week. And even though I could watch it at home, I forced myself to go watch it in the theater because at least then I had no choice. I was
trapped.
I couldn't leave. And I did watch Lion. And that first third is intense and it's powerful. It's almost all visual storytelling. The score, the cinematography, they're great. And they're really strengths of the movie. I'm with most people, I think, in feeling like the other two thirds with Dev Patel as the older version of that young boy isn't as satisfying or compelling.
I'm afraid I'm roughly with you on that. I think the fact that Dev Patel's gotten a few awards for his work lately over such, you know, actors as Mahershala Ali, who I really would prefer to win, you know, I'm a little concerned that a certain segment of kind of the Oscar voters, you know, who really did respond to Lion. And it's not a hard film to respond to emotionally. It's you know, it absolutely does. Right or wrong, the technique of the film, it does all the work for you emotionally, and all you have to do is show up. But I just hope it isn't one of these sneaky kind of like along the rail surprises, because I just would really – but anyway, we'll get there.
I will say about Lion,
and
because
Michael's,
people –
Oh, go ahead.
Yeah, no, people have written in and they've been curious for our response. Besides the obvious, it did remind me a little bit of the Apu trilogy because of the actors playing the young boys in those two cases and their spirit and all the trains dotting the landscape certainly seem very familiar.
Mm-hmm.
But it also has that same combination of bitter and sweet. There's real hope and there's some uplift, as you said, and real emotion at the end of the film. But it also never loses sight of what's been lost. There is a tragic element to the film that you can't shake.
Right. It's true. Although the film really does try to shake it for
Maybe.
You. I mean, there's the it's an affirmative emotional swell after swell after swell. It's like a, you know, it's a tsunami of what it is. And
right.
The actors kind of just keep their head down and
sure.
try to get all the honesty and sincerity out of it they can. And, you know, I mean, they're all... I wouldn't necessarily fault the performances.
Mm-hmm.
They're effective. The film is for in its chosen mode is effective.
Well,
not my favorite nomination.
Yeah,
but,
yeah. You know. But to transition into the category here and our picks, talk about honesty and sincerity bringing to every performance. That is a guy like Michael Shannon. Every time we see him on screen, should I really feel shame that I haven't seen this performance?
Well, he's really good in it. And I do like that. It's a cockamamie movie, this Tom Ford film. A lot of people detest it. Some people, I think, have overpraised it. So I'd say it's a completely artificial construct. And I'll leave it to you to kind of just discover if the thing works for you. But Shannon truly is the standout. And you know, would you ever have thought, Adam, that Michael Shannon has become the kind of actor that people just simply love to see show up. It's like he's the new Wilfred Brimley or Martin Balsam. You know, he's just a character.
I love those
except he's a complete. You know, of course he's known for all these sinister killers and all,
right.
You know, but he's got a very sneaky wide range. If you just catch any 30 of the performances he's given the last 10 years,
right?
And my God, the guy works like a fiend.
Yeah.
It's a really, really sharp performance, and it is worth seeing for him.
What you got to say about this man's wife and daughter?
I don't know nothing about that. I've never seen him before in my life.
What you gonna tell me about Rain Turk?
Who?
Who? What are you, an owl? You an owl, Lou?
I never heard of him.
You never heard of him?
No, sir.
All right.
I am such a big fan of Michael Shannon. I was going to say that I shouldn't admit on air that I haven't seen this, because somehow if Michael Shannon heard it, I'm so intimidated and kind of scared of the guy that that might be a problem. But then again, about people who couldn't care less about their Oscar nomination.
Well, yeah, he's over in Studio B right now.
Great.
He's looking through the glass, so yeah. I think you might want to reconsider.
You've interviewed Shannon before,
oh,
right?
Oh, yeah.
Isn't he kind of
times.
A sweetheart, actually?
He's a pumpkin. He's okay. A puddin'. He's, you know, he's a really good guy. He's a very, he really is great fun to talk to about what he does for a living.
Yeah.
You know, he's got a very disarming mixture of kind of no pretension at all about talking about what an actor mm-hmm. does trying to work out a performance, but also very crafty, very well-read, and I just think he just sees the world in a way that that makes his performances just a little different, a little better than most. So,
yeah. As far as artists go who I haven't interviewed yet here on the show that I'd like to, he's in the
top
three.
We'll get him in.
So maybe it'll happen.
All right, we'll get him in.
So who will win? Who should win, Michael?
All right. Who will win? A couple of weeks ago, I predicted that for my would win, should win of the morning of the nominations, I predicted Mahershala Ali for Moonlight, mm-hmm. and I'm really, really hoping that's true. I think he should win, and I still think he will, even though I just don't know. You just wonder if Dev Patel might be sort of the one award that Lion gets
really?
in this top, you know, in this sort of top six realm. But so that's with that caveat, I'm predicting Ali. That's what I hope, and that's what I predict.
Yeah, that would really trouble me if Patel won, just looking at some of the other candidates there with Ali, with Bridges, with Lucas Hedges, and then some of the names we'll get to who didn't get a nomination.
Right.
But I'm with you. I think it will be Ali's to lose, and I think he should win. And for me, it is a really tough battle between him and Jeff Bridges. Bridges is one of those guys who, fair to say, probably gives very mannered performances. There's certainly choices he makes, and he's very bold in those choices, but I'm never distracted by those choices. I never lose sight of the fact that it's the character that I'm paying attention to and not the different things that Jeff Bridges is doing to bring out that character. I think he's always honest on screen, and I think he's entertaining as hell, and he's entertaining in this role in Hell or High Water as well. But Ali's just one of those performers in Moonlight where I'm grateful every time he's on screen.
Yeah,
and every time he's off screen, I feel a little saddened.
Yeah, he's wonderful in it. And the great thing about Moonlight anyway is that everybody kind of gets their 20, 25 mm-hmm. minutes and then they're off. And so they have to be this good to make an impression.
I've been here a long time. And I'm from Cuba. A lot of black folks in Cuba. You wouldn't know that from being here, though. I was a wild little shorty, man. Just like you. Run around with no shoes on, the moon was out. This one time, I run by this old lady. I was running, hollering, cutting a fool, boy. This old lady, she stopped me. She said, running around, catching a boy that light. In Moonlight, black boys look blue. You blue. That's what I gonna call you. Blue.
And on paper, I was just thinking about Moonlight again, which is, you know, my favorite film last year. On some level, narratively, you almost shouldn't believe that this particular drug dealer is that sympathetic and empathetic,
right.
And and dimensional, and mm-hmm. and yet he doesn't, you know, he doesn't turn him into kind of the wrong sort of saint,
no.
or you know, he's not really the conscience of the movie or anything like that. You know, there's
right.
there's none of that freight
no.
that messes up.
No, you're so right.
A script there's no, or a performance.
There's no judgment on his part, which yeah. also means that he's not only not too harsh with the character, but he's not too loving towards
right,
the
right,
character
right.
either. He just portrays him, and he doesn't try to push our sympathies as an audience one way or another.
Right.
And I think that also gives him the sense of a character who's just always kind of in flux. And so every time he's on screen, there's an enigmatic quality to him that makes him so fascinating. The writing, of course, and the directing, Barry Jenkins, that's a big part of it. But there is just a depth to this character and layers of mystery there that only, I think, the performance can bring
Yeah,
out.
I agree. And, you know, I think the other thing with him is that he's a part of the, you know, the very strong ensemble in Hidden Figures,
mm-hmm.
which is an enormous success.
He's very good at it.
And, yeah, in those scenes, I believe less. And they're somewhat fraudulent in some ways. I think this scenes he's got to act, but he, you know, they are acted as well as they possibly
yes.
could be. Yeah.
Yes, they are. So, Michael, if you had to take someone out of this category, would it be Dev Patel, and who would you replace him with?
The only one I would take out is Dev Patel. He's, you know, he's perfectly good.
Yeah, he's
perfectly
fine.
Good, but he's just not what Lucas Hedges is doing, or Shannon, or, you know, or Ali, or he's just not quite up there. I, as mixed as I was, and I'm still trying to wrestle after two viewings with exactly why I didn't respond more strongly to Martin Scorsese's Silence.
You did it twice, though.
I saw it twice.
Wow.
And that was a commitment, you know,
because you're
it's
a saint.
It's
Saint
a methodical.
Well,
the movie's a, you know, the movie spoke to me, obviously.
Uh-huh.
Just saint to saint. It spoke
right.
to me. But Issei Ogata, as the inquisitor of the in this corner of Japan in the 17th century, where he's basically the formidable adversary of the Jesuit missionaries,
mm-hmm.
played by Andrew Garfield and Adam Driver. He's a wonderful, wonderful actor, a veteran. Worked with all kinds of great directors, including my favorite performance of his earlier was in the Sakura film The Sun, where he plays Hirohito, and it is just this brilliantly observed and gently comic performance of Hirohito right after, you know, just on the verge of the surrender to the Allies in 1945. And I don't know, this guy's got just amazing chops, and he's very little known in the U.S. I it would have been a wonderful nomination. I wish
yeah.
he'd gotten it. Yeah.
Well, for me, Patel would be out as well, and I would go with a couple of the other Moonlight stars. I didn't expect more than one to be nominated, but certainly Trevante Rhodes would be my first choice. I know Andre Holland was another actor who was in contention. His name was thrown about here and there.
Holland's
but
great, yeah.
He is so good. But
they're all good.
He didn't make it, alas. Alden Ehrenreich, you know, I love everything he does in Hail Caesar.
You guys, you and
we're
Josh
very
with
pro
the
Hail Caesar.
Yeah, I know.
In terms of my choice who had no chance at all and no pundit talked about, but I love this film and I love this performance. I've talked about him a lot here on our end of the year shows, but Glenn Powell, who plays the best friend any young frat boy baseball player could have in Richard Linklater's Everybody Wants Some.
Right.
I would have loved to have seen him get some attention from the Academy, but of course there was no way that was ever going to happen. So
right.
we now move on to Best Actress in a Supporting Role. The nominees are Viola Davis for Fences, Octavia Spencer, Hidden Figures, Naomi Harris for Moonlight, Nicole Kidman for Lion, and Michelle Williams, Manchester by the Sea. Now, before you give your picks, I do want to usher a quick correction that someone on Twitter pointed out to me, which was when we talked about the Oscars here on the show right after the nominations were announced, I was talking about how great it was that we had three African-American actresses in this category. Of course, I've talked to Naomi Harris here in studio. She would be non-white. She would be a woman of color. There are probably lots of other appropriate terms I could use. Inaccurate would be African-American,
right.
since she's
right.
British.
Right.
So
right. British, yeah.
Film Spotting regrets the error. Michael Phillips, who will win? Who should win?
You know, this is just like the other category. Viola Davis in Fences, I think, should and will. It's a huge performance. She won Best Actress on Broadway for the same
mm-hmm.
performance opposite Denzel Washington a few years ago in the Broadway revival of the August Wilson play Fences. And, you know, it's a great stealthy role because she kind of hangs in the background to the point in the first half of the picture where you think, okay, this is just simply kind of a – it's a bit frustrating to see this role kind of in recede
mm-hmm.
in relationship to this sort of bombastic, you know, the blowhard aspect of the character that Denzel Washington plays, Troy Maxson. And then August Wilson, you know, sort of lets her have her do, and dramatically it's completely justified, and she just steps forward and just eats up the picture in a great way.
Yes.
Not in a scenery-chewing way.
No.
Davis is great. Overdue, you know, you name the picture, she probably should have won it for it. And I love a lot of the work here. I mean, Naomi Harris is great in Moonlight, and I think Octavia Spencer is, you know, she just has fantastic audience rapport.
Yes.
If you see Hidden Figures with any crowd, you know, it's just stunning how she, that performance, without playing to the balcony or being too calculating about it, I think she just really has a great way to, and a really good kind of dynamic range. She knows how to play every mood of the scene. And Michelle Williams, but all that, I say, should win. Viola Davis will win. Viola Davis. You?
Yeah, that's where I was earlier today when I was preparing, and certainly I do think Viola Davis is going to win. And I'll just say about her performance, you covered it so well, but it's an absurd compliment to try to pay to her to say that she goes toe-to-toe with Denzel Washington. Of course she does. She's an incredibly forceful, formidable actress. Denzel's lucky to go toe-to-toe with her, but it is the bombast of that performance. It's that character in particular, Troy, that she's playing opposite, that anybody, no matter how talented you are, could get lost a little bit there. And even in those earlier scenes where she's a little bit in the background, she doesn't ever recede, as you said. I mean, she really is still a presence throughout this entire film. And of course, I love it more when she finally gets to assert herself a little bit, but she's always there. And I think she's an amazing talent. And I hope that the calculation made on the part of the studio to put her in best supporting actress instead of best actress does pay off for her. I hope she wins, especially as Octavia Spencer has already won once for The Help. But let me at least say that I'm going to make the case for Octavia Spencer should win for Hidden Figures, of course, partly because it's truly a supporting role. But there are just two moments in that film that really nail it for me. And one of them I mentioned at the wrap party when Tasha brought up Hidden Figures, Tasha Robinson, during our Scenes of the Year. It was one of her nominees, a different scene, not involving Octavia Spencer. But when she's talking with Kirsten Dunst's character and Spencer's character, Dorothy Vaughn, says, "Thank you for the information, Mrs. Mitchell." And Dunst's character, Vivian, says, "You're quite welcome, Mrs. Vaughn." And if you've been paying attention, that's a big moment in the film because she's never been given that respect of having her last name being spoken to her.
Right.
And of course, that's how she has to refer to Mrs. Mitchell and every other white woman that she speaks to. That could have been a moment that maybe tried to elicit some more emotion out of us, or that Octavia Spencer in that scene played it as if this is the moment I want the audience to really break down and be on my side. But she's just right. And
just
another scene that she's just right is the one where she, also talking to Kirsten Dunst's character, has to give a little back to her.
"I hear the IBM's up to full capacity. You certainly have a knack for it."
"My father taught me a thing or two about mechanics.
You know, I have a few girls in the East Group that have an interest in learning more about it."
"It is the future."
"I may bring them by if it's all the same to you."
"That's not my decision, ma'am. That would be the supervisor."
"Yes, that's true."
"Well, good night, Mrs. Mitchell."
"You know, Dorothy, despite what you may think, I have nothing against y'all."
"I know. I know you probably believe that."
It's a moment that could have been so self-righteous and we would have completely been on her side. It would have been totally justified.
Right.
But instead, she just plays it right. She just lets the line speak for itself.
Yeah,
she lets the moment breathe for itself.
In fact, that relationship, that sort of push-pull between those two characters, Kirsten Dunst and the Octavia Spencer character, that's the most kind of authentic early 60s dynamic in that picture. Because there's a lot of that picture, as effective and as beloved as that film is, that I just simply don't believe in terms of human behavior with those people in mm-hmm. that time.
Yeah.
I think the big moment, and I know it totally worked for Tasha because she sure. talked about it on the Rap Show, where Taraji P. Henson really finally just fed up yeah. with this business of having to use the, you know, you can't use the white bathroom mm-hmm. in the building she's working in. She has to go, you know, waste all this time going into the colored bathrooms, so-called, in the building across the way. You know, all absolutely, God knows, historically accurate and all that, but there's too much going on in that storyline that just feels off to me. The Kevin Costner character, for one thing, saying, you know what, you can't use our bathrooms. It's like, yeah. it's like, where's this guy been? And mm-hmm. and her kind of big, you know, kind of turn the tables moment where she just stands up and just sort of like spiels about, you know, really, really lets everybody have it about it. Satisfying for an audience
yes.
in 2017 and not, to me, mm-hmm. narratively plausible for 1963.
Right.
Yeah, it just
and a good counter. You're absolutely right to the moments we're talking
exactly,
about with Spencer
exactly. yep.
there. So Viola Davis, we think, will win, and we are both completely good with that.
Yes,
if she does,
yes,
though, I'd
yes,
love to see Spencer
yes.
get it as well. Now, in terms of maybe who you could bump out mm-hmm. and you'd insert someone else in, who would it be?
You know, I hate to beat up on Lion again, but Nicole Kidman, pretty good. I would probably drop her and sort of with the same strategy as nominating Viola Davis in Fences. I would probably try to justify Annette Bening as a supporting actress and nominate her for 20th Century
okay.
Woman. Do you know what I mean? It's,
yeah.
it's an ensemble
yeah.
piece
mm-hmm.
enough. And she would obviously make sense as a leading performance. And I think that was one that a lot of people felt, you know, that's too bad that, you know, this felt like her time. I like that film quite mm-hmm. a bit. And I like the acting a lot better than quite a bit. And I think Bening is just, you know, there's a wit that comes through here that doesn't always come through with her work.
Sometimes yeah, I agree.
Sometimes there's a... you know, it's always kind of technically immaculate, but maybe you hear the machinery too much. But I just think here it's all kind of works in this portrait of a 1970s Santa Barbara woman and
yeah.
mother who's just trying to kind of make her way and figure out the world she's living in and the time mm-hmm. she's living in. Anyway,
yeah that's
a
compelling
that.
Argument for
what
sure.
About you?
Kidman would be out for me as well. I'd put Lily Gladstone in for Certain Women, the Kelly Reichardt film, mm-hmm. and she did get some attention. She was kind of bandied about as far as the names that were in that 5 to 10 top contenders.
In fact, got a lot of regional
yes.
Critics awards for that performance.
Indeed, she did. So I would have loved to have seen Gladstone get in there. And then the film that still, I think I'm the only person who's seen it, Carmen Ejogo for Born to be Blue.
Ah, I haven't seen it yet. See,
she
I haven't seen everything.
Really great in that film. And you can make an argument that she's a best actress candidate, but she really is second in terms of amount of screen time and in terms of the role overall compared to Ethan Hawke, the Chet Baker biopic. But
yeah,
she's
yeah.
wonderful. And I'd seen her in a couple things here and there, but really a standout and someone now I have my eye on. We are going to get back to our Oscar picks here in a little bit. We are going to, of course, share our picks for Best Actress and Best Picture and Director. We are also going to do some acting worthy of being snubbed by the Academy with Massacre Theater. Now, we only have one break in this show, Michael, and my idea was to play a song, a Best Original Song former winner, a favorite, or maybe my favorite
okay.
of all the Best Original Song winners. If we had two breaks, then I'd get one and Josh would get one.
Are you gonna sing Evergreen?
I'm not going to. We
okay.
only have one break, so we have one song to play, and I came up with one that happens to be my choice, and also I think you would be a big fan of as well, knowing your love for the John Carney film Once.
Yes.
So the 2007 winner for Best Original Song, the best song in the movie, as far as I'm concerned, even though I love the soundtrack, Falling Slowly. That's what we're gonna hear going into the break.
I don't want you all the more for that. Words fall through me and always fool me, and I can't react. In games that never amount to more than their meant will play themselves out. Take this sinking boat and point it home. We've still
up in Vienna that December?
No. Did you?
No, I couldn't, but did you? I need to know, it's important to me.
Why, if you didn't?
Well, did you? Oh, oh, thank God you didn't.
Well, thank God. Like, thank God you didn't.
Michael Phillips in with me this week as we are talking Oscars. We'll get back to that here in a bit. You just heard Julie Delpy and Ethan Hawke in Before Sunset. It is one of 65 films that will be competing in this year's Film Spotting Madness. Michael, do you remember this insanity and absurdity from last year when we did directors?
Yes.
We only did 32 directors. We landed on one winner. The winner, as chosen by Film Spotting Nation, was the Coen brothers.
Yes.
And this follows our first year, the inaugural edition of Film Spotting Madness, where we did actors versus actresses, Michael Fassbender v. Jessica Chastain.
Right, right.
In the championship bout, and it did eventually go to Michael Fassbender. So this year, we're opening it up, and we're going to get to this next week on the show. We're opening it up to a field of 65. There is a play-in game. Mm. We took the 40 or so movies that have been put in the Film Spotting pantheon over the years, and then we've also added the titles that have been given the sacred cow treatment
right
here on the show. So that means, for example, your much beloved Raiders of the Lost Ark could win the whole thing, Michael.
Oh, I'm sure it will. I'm sure there.
I don't think that's going to happen.
Just wipe the nostalgic tears of joy away from just out of their eyes long enough to type in the response. Mm-hmm. So it'll win, probably.
It just might. We will see.
And now, if Peter Sagal from Wait, Don't Tell Me has any say about it, he's Raiders will win.
Okay, well, we're going to have to get him on the show. We'll see if we have a connection here. All three of the Before movies technically are in the pantheon. We put the Before trilogy in there, but will all three compete in the tourney? You'll have to wait and see next week. And Josh, behind the scenes here, had the temerity, Michael, to suggest that Richard Linklater's films look a little bit out of place against all the other Pantheon contenders. I took that as a very personal shot. And so now I hope that listeners pay him back for that comment.
Dismissive, was he?
Yes, he was very dismissive. But we'll see how out of place he is as we get into Film Spotting Madness here next week on the show. And of course, throughout March and a little bit into April. If the current Film Spotting poll is any indication, Linklater should feel pretty confident going into the tournament. We asked people which Film Spotting Madness contender featuring a famous movie couple is best poised to play the Cinderella role in this year's tourney. So along with Jesse and Celine from Before Sunset, you've got Joel and Clementine from Eternal Sunshine of the Spotless Mind, Margot and Richie Tenenbaum from The Royal Tenenbaums, and from Groundhog Day, a 2014 Sacred Cow review, Bill Murray and Andy McDowell, Phil and Rita, of course. So that's the current poll question. You can go and vote now, but Sunset is doing quite well, Michael, in that poll. If you had to vote, who would you go with?
You know, I'd probably work in another couple from Groundhog Day. I think Bill Murray and Stephen Tobolowsky are really my favorite couple.
Ned Ryerson.
Zing. Ned Ryerson. Phil?
Yeah.
You know, I mean, to me, that's the couple.
Yeah. Michael Shannon, also in one of his early film roles.
Right. Shows up as three lines or something in Groundhog Day.
Right. Well, you can vote now at filmspotting.net. If you leave a comment, and we hope you do, please let us know where you're listening from. For all of our Chicago listeners, we love giving away some movie passes. And the movie Personal Shopper, the latest from Olivier Assayas, is coming out. Another collaboration with Kristen Stewart following Clouds of Sils Maria, a film I quite enjoyed. And Personal Shopper opens March 17th. We've got passes for a March 7th screening here in the city.
Ooh.
If you want to enter to win passes to that, you can do so at filmspotting.net. It's right there in the top stories. Also, you will find there your opportunity to enter to win passes to the latest film from Terrence Malick. It's called Song to Song. It opens on March 24th. The screening is Monday, March 20th. This has Michael Fassbender, Film Spotting Madness champion Michael Fassbender,
right.
Ryan Gosling,
right.
Rooney Mara, Natalie Portman.
None of whom will probably be actually talking.
You're right.
They're going to be wandering.
Their voice,
they'll be musing, a voiceover. Now, I don't want to prejudge because I do, at this point, my frustration with Malick is such that I would really, really love it if he got even halfway back towards something with at least the sporadic riches of the Tree of Life.
Yeah,
you know?
I'm with you. That would be amazing. It has been a little while. The movie is set in Austin, Texas. Two entangled couples chase success through a rock and roll landscape of seduction and betrayal. I mean, he had me at rock and roll landscape.
Yeah.
That sounds great.
Who knows?
And Seduction and Betrayal.
And so he's working in his hometown, and he's in where he lives. And, you know, who knows? It may bring out a different sort of a different flavor.
It might. Like,
who knows?
Yeah. So, again, we have passes for both Personal Shopper and the latest from Terrence Malick, Song to Song, available now at filmspotting.net. I probably shouldn't say this because I might be able to get the audience on my side, and that will be unfair as Josh and I are debating behind the scenes what we should do on a future episode. But that week that Personal Shopper comes out, I'm actually suggesting, Michael, I'm wondering what your response to this will be, that we should turn the episode over to a Kristen Stewart appreciation episode.
I think it's good.
Bring in a guest, maybe, who's really familiar with her work. We talk about her best performances.
Yeah.
Are you in?
Yeah,
if we did something like
get
that?
Get her on the phone. Man. I'd honestly like to hear what she has to say about performances that mean something to her. You know?
Yeah.
I think she's, you know, she's, I always bring it back to Jesse Eisenberg, who's a frequent co-star with her. But, you know, they're very similar performers, those two. And the fact that they were both kind of consistently, I think, underestimated by a lot of people. And it's not
And just, I thought you were going to say a little bit twitchy, which early in their careers.
But, well, whatever. But, you know, look, every actor that is forced to rely on what has worked in the past, you know, it takes a while to find the material that can bring out something new in you, and the director that can kind of say, you know, look, a little less of that, a little more of this, or, you know, why are you doing that? But it's happened, you know. I mean, if you look at her best work, it's really good.
Yeah, it definitely is. One little bit of housekeeping. We were planning to get to the final film in our Luis Buñuel marathon this week. His final film, That Obscure Object of Desire, I believe from 1977. Very good film. Spoiler alert there. As we plan to discuss that, it will be next week if Josh is, of course, recovered from the sickness, whatever it is he has.
The vapors.
And then following that, we are going to dive into our next marathon. There's almost going to be no time off as we're going to get into the work of Agnes Varda.
Wow. You guys take
six
films. You take them on. That's good.
Well, let's take on some bad acting here. It's time for Massacre Theater, the part of the show where we perform a scene and you get a chance at winning a prize. A couple weeks back, I don't know that you can massacre this, but Josh and I tried to massacre this scene.
Remember when you used to go in the park and play? And I used to put you on the swings. And both of you were so damn little. God.
I remember all of it.
Well, I ain't gonna be around to pick you up when you fall now. Both of you gotta take care of each other now.
I'll never see you again, Dad.
Yes, you will. I don't want to hear that, Maddie.
What happened to Mom, Deb? Where is she?
Can't afford to be crying anymore now. I don't want either one of you to ever cry for me again. I'll never do it.
Because it comes pre-massacred. As good as Harry Dean Stanton is in almost everything, that's him as Mr. Eckert, Charlie Sheen as Matt, and Patrick Swayze as Jed in 1984's Red Dawn, written by John Milius and Kevin Reynolds, directed by Milius. And yes, Kevin Reynolds, the future director of Robin Hood, Prince of Thieves, and Waterworld. That Massacre Theater was part of a show that also included our top five political resistance movies. Michael Szczesny was a guest on that show, and our blind spotting review of the brilliant The Battle of Algiers. We have some feedback from listeners who knew what we were after there, Michael, with Red Dawn.
Tom Robertson, all the way from Burwood, Victoria, Australia. You know, my grandmother was from Australia.
I didn't know that.
I know. And she did not know Tom Robertson, I think.
Probably not.
The film massacred in this week's episode shares the theme of resistance, sometimes by force, with the top fives and the Battle of Algiers. I was actually a little disappointed that you cut the scene short and we didn't hear one of the most memorable and iconic lines of the film, "Avenge me!" Originally spoken by Harry Dean Stanton, delivered by Josh in his goat-like inspired performance. He's always back to Black Phillip from The Witch.
Yeah, that's it.
Thanks for another fine performance, gentlemen. Viva la revolution.
Matt O'Reilly in San Francisco describes Red Dawn as one of the quintessential guilty pleasure movies from the 80s. Notably, it was directed by the great John Milius, who also wrote the screenplay. Milius is a prolific, if lesser known, Hollywood icon who also wrote and sometimes directed some of the great films of his era. Apocalypse Now, Magnum Force, Jeremiah Johnson, and Dirty Harry, uncredited for the screenplay, Matt notes. For those great works, I bet he can be forgiven for writing Spielberg's biggest bomb, 1941.
Rob McKinnon from Little Britain, Ontario, says, hopefully this film will not be eventually looked upon as a prescient harbinger of things to come. What with your new president's seemingly cozy relationship with Vladimir Putin?
Oh, we had to get it in.
Yeah.
You had to get a little reference in there to Trump and Putin if we're doing a scene from Red Dawn. And before we get to this week's scene, we have one more bit of feedback. Ed Savoy in Harrisonburg, Pennsylvania, always sends in very clever, inspired massacre theater responses. And last time he entered, his note was scripted to the tune, because you remember we performed West Side Story at the Rat Party in January.
Right.
His note was scripted to the tune of Officer Krupke from West Side Story. And at the time, a couple weeks ago, we couldn't make his lyrics fit the tune. So Josh made the joke that if someone does this in the future, if they're going to basically send us a song and send us lyrics, they got to actually, they got to perform it.
Yeah.
They got to send us a voicemail.
They want it. They secretly want it anyway.
And we got to hear it. You're right. So Ed, well, he rose to the challenge. Boy, did he ever. Let's hear it.
Dear Adam and Josh, guys, your go-at glory clearly comes from the musical West Side Story. The tie comes from the lead-in and La La Land talk. All three are from the musical genre block. Genre block, genre block, genre block. It's the genre block singing West Side and all the La La talk.
Yeah.
How good is that?
That guy can, he should play all the Jets and the Sharks.
He should.
Both.
But he did it. And you know what? It doesn't stop there. The hits keep coming because Ed Savoy also decided to enter for Red Dawn. I don't remember any singing. I don't remember any dancing, but we're going to hear his entry anyway.
I've had the Red Dawn of my life. That's my film spotting entry. And I swear this tie-in's true because of the politically resistant Wolverines.
Nice.
How about that?
It's beautiful. He's got a great, he's a balladeer.
He can carry a tune.
He's a balladeer.
Very, very impressed, Ed. Despite all that, he didn't win Massacre Theater this week.
Mm.
Someone else did, Michael. You're going to reach into the brimming film spotting hat.
Here we go. Here we go. Okay. Beating Ed Savoy. So how bad can he be? Jack Stripling of Arlington, Virginia. He's our winner.
He is our winner from Film Spotting East, Arlington, Virginia. Congratulations, Jack. Email feedback at filmspotting.net, and we will set you up with your very own Film Spotting t-shirt.
Ruthless simple.
Would that it were.
Selfless simple.
Would that it were.
Or selfless. You could say selfless. Ruthless selfless. Would that it were so simple.
Would that it. Would that it were so simple.
Why are you doing this with
the twist? Would that it were so simple.
Just keep still.
So this week's scene started as a three-person scene. There is a third person in the scene, but we've managed to reduce the script a little bit to make it just a two-person scene.
Right.
The friend is on the outside.
So we're the producers saying, hey, we love the words. We just need to change them.
Exactly.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Exactly. Mm-hmm. So, Michael, I have to play the part I'm going to play here, basically because it's the only time in my life I will ever feel this cool. And it's pretty sad if you think about it, because I'm going to come nowhere close to being as cool as this actor or this actor playing this character.
Yeah.
But it's all I've got to go with. It's all. It's all I've got.
It's all right.
Okay.
Now let's just let the people guess, you know.
We're not going to give you any other hints.
Okay.
It ties in, we'll just say, it ties in with our show this week and our Oscar picks.
We're
fair
ready.
Enough?
We're ready. We're ready.
I started off, you're going to give me the action.
Got it. And action.
I think that your friend is really sexy.
Oh, my God. You did not just say that. How old are you?
What are you, a lawyer?
A little bit.
Come on.
I know.
You are?
Don't you think you're a little old to be using cheesy pickup lines?
Objection. Leading the witness. Wow, you're really wearing that dress like you're doing it a favor.
Oh, God.
That's a line. Me, sitting over there for the past 2 hours not being able to take my eyes off of you is a fact. I find you very attractive. Do you find me attractive?
I don't.
You do.
I don't.
Permission to approach the bench?
Seriously?
Just come on. Let me deliver my closing argument.
Sure, proceed.
We live in a physical world, right?
Mm-hmm.
And you're going to age, right?
Mm-hmm.
I guarantee you this. You're never going to regret going home with that guy from the bar that one time who was a total tomcat in the sack. But I can't guarantee that you won't not regret it.
That was a double negative.
You're a double negative.
And scene. You know, I'm glad you liked this movie more than I did, but I tried to get
didn't
over my...
Love this movie.
It's all right. We
didn't
don't have to
it.
Review it.
We don't
just,
have to.
We just, you know, actors are not paid for their opinions about the material, you know?
Fair enough.
I mean, they're just...
No they judgment
to,
here.
They just have to leave it alone and try to overcome.
There you go. If you know what film we just massacred, email the movie's title along with your name and location to feedback@filmspotting.net. The deadline is Monday, March 6th.
The winner will be selected randomly from all the correct entries and announced in a couple of weeks. To get official Massacre Theater rules, visit filmspotting.net.
You got your toothbrush?
Check.
Do you have your deodorant?
Check.
Do you have your cozy clothes?
Got that.
What?
Do they know I'm black?
Should they?
You might wanna, you know.
Mom and Dad, my black boyfriend will be coming up this weekend. I just don't want you to be shocked that he's a black man.
I ain't never seen you like this before, bro.
Meeting families. Taking road trips, don't come back all bougie, man.
Come back, get your damn pants up to your damn stomach.
A little bit of the trailer there from Get Out, which opens this weekend, written and directed by Jordan Peele of Key and Peele fame, Daniel Kaluuya and Allison Williams, the actors in that scene from a film that we think is a horror satire. Michael, you know whether or not it can be called a horror slash satire because you just saw it.
I have not,
but you just came from it. Immediate reactions?
Just
anything you can share?
Liked it. I missed it at Sundance when I was there. It was, I think, a midnight sneak. And as you can kind of tell from the trailers, I think, of Get Out that are all over the place, it's a film that the trailers give it all away, of course, and the sort of secrets, the plot developments anyway, that come out in the second half of the picture are all over the trailer. Mm-hmm. I hate that. But it's a very simple premise in that Daniel Kaluuya and Allison Williams play this interracial couple, and she's bringing him home to meet her folks for the first time, and he asks early on in the picture, do they know I'm black? No, I didn't tell them. It'll be fine. They're not racist. They're good people. There's a very clever one of many lines like this in the picture where the Allison Williams character says, if my father, you know, could have voted for Obama a third time, he would have, just to kind of prove the liberal cred, right?
Right.
And then what happens from there is a very kind of tricky blend of this sort of sly social satire and then what becomes increasingly kind of a full bore, not really a horror film, but sort of a revenge picture. And I find it a pretty bracing, good time, actually. There's a lot of sort of great rousing audience moments I saw with a kind of a good rowdy crowd tonight. And I don't know. I really felt like it worked. I think Peele is a real talent. And I got to say, coming off the Key and Peele movie from last year, Keanu, which I thought was a big disappointment.
Me too.
And that's a film that wasn't really trying for the kind of tonal mixture this one is. It was just trying to kind of sell you on its version of an action comedy. But this is like three times a more interesting picture. So, you know, some limitations, but it's good. Check it out.
Yeah, I can't wait to see it. And in fact, I do plan to see it this weekend. And Josh and I plan to talk about it a little bit on next week's show.
You go to the Virginia State Court next, right?
Yes.
You nervous?
I suppose. The lawyers told us not to expect much.
You think you'll lose?
Well, yes. But I think it's all right. We may lose the small battles, but win the big war.
We get back to our Oscar picks with a clip there from Jeff Nichols' film Loving, one of his two films from 2016, along with Midnight Special, Ruth Negga. She is probably going to lose this battle as well, the battle for Best Actress here at the Oscars, but maybe she'll win the big war in getting at least one of our picks for who should win.
We'll find out here, all right, we'll see. As
we get to the candidates for Best Actress. They are Ruth Negga, Isabelle Huppert for Elle, Emma Stone for La La Land, Natalie Portman for Jackie, and Meryl Streep for Florence Foster Jenkins. Michael, who will win? Who should win?
Will win. Oh, man, this is a toughie because Isabelle Huppert has got a lot of support, I think, from a lot of people, just because she's giving two very good performances this year, in one in Elle and another one in the Mia Hansen love film,
Things to Come.
Things to Come, which is a very different kind of picture and a very different key. And it would not break my heart at all to see her win. But I frankly think it's should and will is still going to be Emma Stone. I just think, you know, I'm in the bag for La La Land for all its problems. Emma Stone is kind of the driving force of the film emotionally, and she's just really good. I never thought much more. I've spoken about this before, but I've never thought much more about Emma Stone than good, solid journeyman work. And, you know, I thought the nomination for Birdman in the supporting actress category was a little premature. I thought, you know, okay, but that's – it was really more responding, I think, to the writing I didn't like so much in Birdman than the actors. But – I think Stone has really, really hit a whole new level here. So,
okay.
Yeah, I hate to be vanilla, you know, and we can get into the La La Land questions about vanilla versus more interesting flavors. But
I hope to get into that a little bit and get into the performances specifically as we get into Best Director and Best Picture.
What about you for this actress?
I agree with you that I think Emma Stone is going to win. I think who should win, I would go with Ruth Negga, though I would love to see Isabelle Huppert win just because she's Isabelle Huppert. I actually don't love her performance in Elle, but I think it would be nice to see her get that victory. I do think that with Negga, it's a very understated performance, a bit like Casey Affleck's performance in Manchester by the Sea. We'll talk about those in a moment. That may be the only similarity between the two characters they play. But watching her over the course of that film develop into the head of that household and the person who's really steering the ship without raising her voice, with ever being a domineering physical presence, without any sense of intimidation. She just has a purpose about her. And watching that awakening was a real pleasure. And I enjoyed loving quite a bit. And her performance was probably my favorite part of it.
She's fantastic. And no, I mean, if that name came up, you know, on Oscar night, it would be a very happy surprise.
Yeah.
You know, so, yeah. You know, she's got great stuff in her.
If you had to kick someone out, who would it be? And who would you put in her place?
Probably Meryl Streep.
Yeah.
I mean, I thought that film, Stephen Frears can be kind of a ham bone as a director. He can let actors get away with murder. And I think that film is, there's lovely things in it, I think, in small moments, especially from Hugh Grant. But, you know, I'd probably ditch Streep and, you know, go through some sort of machinations to get, if she didn't get the supporting actress nomination I was bucking for recently on this show, I'd probably sneak in Annette Bening.
Yeah.
That's what I would do for 20th Century Women.
I can't kick out Meryl Streep with any conviction because this is the other film that we're going to talk about, the other nominee that I haven't seen. So can't really comment on her performance, but I wonder what you think of my suggestion, Michael, that of course will never happen, that I made a few weeks ago when the nominees were announced, that the Oscars need to adopt their own pantheon, just like film spotting. And Meryl Streep just needs to be put in that pantheon. And we just all agree how amazing she is. And she doesn't ever get nominated again.
No, that's a dumb idea.
Okay.
I'm sorry.
Well, it's not my first.
And I got problems with half the stuff in your pantheon, your alleged pantheon.
You should.
Anyway, but I think she can get as many nominations as the Academy sees fit, you know,
and
it's just up to Cheryl Boone Isaacs, the head of the Academy, to continue the efforts to diversify and broaden the spectrum of people in that Academy. So, and then, you know, who knows? I'm not saying, you know, is she an overrated actress like Trump calls her? No. But was this particularly nomination worthy? I don't know. Maybe not.
Negga was the only one of the five finalists here that was in my top five or six lead actress performances of the year. I would completely blow this one up. I'd put Annette Bening in there, certainly, for 20th Century Women. Rebecca Hall for Christine. Right up there with Creesha Fairchild for Creesha performances of the year.
No, we're both crazy about Creesha anyway.
Yeah. Kate Beckinsale, though, was sort of in that mix with Hall and Bening. Haley Steinfeld for The Edge of 17. Their names were bandied about, but they did not, obviously, get the nomination. And I'd love any of those names in there.
Right. And speaking of which, I have to jump back to supporting actor for just a second.
Sure.
Tom Bennett for Love and Friendship and The Witch. I mean, that's the funniest performance of the year.
Yeah. Not a huge performance by any means,
but
comedic gold every time he's on screen.
Yes. So hit the jump back, but there it is.
We agree with each other on that. Let's get then to Best Actor. I've seen all of these films. Casey Affleck, Manchester by the Sea, Andrew Garfield, Hacksaw Ridge, Ryan Gosling, La La Land, Viggo Mortensen, Captain Fantastic, and Denzel Washington, fences. Who will? Who should?
So it's Casey Affleck winning everything, everything, everything. And then at the Screen Actors Guild Award, Denzel Washington. And suddenly you have a real horse race. And I think, my earlier prediction was should win, will win, Casey Affleck. Because, I'm very strong on the performance. And I think it's very hard to make that recessive and withheld a character that compelling. Mm-hmm. And I've liked Casey Affleck a lot for a long time, certainly since the assassination of Jesse James. But I hope he wins. I actually think it's going to be Denzel Washington.
Yeah.
I think they're going to give it to him. And mm-hmm. and again, it's a really marvelous full body performance. And it's very different from the James Earl Jones interpretation of that role, which I saw on Broadway in the August Wilson play a generation ago. It just proves how many different ways you can play a really good character if it's written well. So yeah, it's going to be a close one though.
Oh, look here, Bruno. When I first met this woman, I got out that place there, hitch up my pony, saddle up my mare. There's a woman out there for me somewhere. I looked at here, looked at there, saw Rose, and I latched on to her. I latched on to her, and I told her. No, I'm going to tell you the truth. I latched on to her and told her, baby, I don't want to marry. I just want to be your man. Rose told me. Tell him what you told me, Rose.
I told him if he wasn't a mankind, then move out the way so the mankind could find me.
That's what she told me. You're in my way. You're blocking the view. Move out the way so I can find me a husband.
Yeah, I agree with everything you said. Denzel Washington, I think, will win. I think Casey Affleck should win, and I can't articulate any better than you just did why. In terms of who I might bump out of this category, if I had that power, Andrew Garfield, Hacksaw Ridge.
Yes.
It's also
and Viggo Mortensen.
Well, I want to talk about that in a second, but I do think Hacksaw Ridge, not a terrible film, but not a particularly good one either, one I just did catch up with. Mm. Garfield also gives an okay performance, but nothing that stands out compared to the other nominees here and some of the other names I'm going to mention, including Joel Edgerton for Loving. Of course, you know I'm all in on Clint Eastwood's Sully and Tom Hanks, as boring a choice as that may be. The hypocrisy there of my Meryl Streep pick. Of course, Chris Pine for Hell or High Water was thrown about a little bit as a possible contender, and then the others who maybe really had no chance at all that I would love to have seen get nominated, Ethan Hawke for Born to Be Blue again, and Peter Simonicek for Tony Erdmann.
Yeah, I'm definitely with you on that. To me, Tony Erdmann, which, you know, is a challenging film for a lot of just sort of casual mm-hmm. art house film goers, because it's longish and it's somewhat abrasive and, you know, a little outrageous. Anyway,
sure.
Those performances, both performances are, if you look at the work of Sandra Hüller and Peter Simonicek in Tony Erdmann, I just defy you to find anything wrong with a second of what they're doing across 3 hours of this weirdly unpredictable German comedy.
Captain Fantastic. That was another piece of homework I had to do to prepare for this show. I just watched it a couple nights ago.
Yeah.
I can see the look on your face.
Yeah, dumb movie.
You really don't like this movie.
It's a dumb movie. It says nothing about anything.
I like Viggo in it.
I always like the movie. And you're on a first name basis with Viggo.
I am.
So.
Yeah, it's just fun to say.
10 years ago when he was nominated for Eastern Promises, it was sort of an admirable surprise, I thought, because it was a really good film and a really sharp performance. And I just don't have anything like the same reaction to his work in Captain Fantastic. Not really his fault, but I think everything about that film is false. So,
yeah, I'm not surprised.
Even the people who admire it, I think, are false, horrible people.
Well, maybe we should just move right along. Then, because I don't know how to counter that.
Might be a little harsh.
Well, I'll say this about Viggo Mortensen and his performance. I think what he reveals throughout the course of the film, he projects that character who has gone off to the wilderness with his six kids and is teaching them all the things that they really should know and all the things that are wrong with the world. He sort of projects himself as someone who is completely detached and not susceptible to kind of the everyday human BS, or at least American BS. He's above it all, and maybe he's not self-congratulatory even about it. It's just who he is. But then what you kind of do come to realize is that, no, he's just as susceptible to selfishness and poor judgment as the rest of us morons out there trying to make it through every day.
Right.
And so I think he does show that. The vulnerability is there.
It's there. It's there. And the way the story goes, it does sort of force the guy to kind of face up to what he's
right.
created and the risk he's taking with his kids. But, you know, it's again, I just don't – if I really believed it moment to moment in any way.
Sure.
I don't mean like in a documentary. I just mean sort of like a you know, human beings on planet Earth way.
And I have a hard time – coming up with a great counter argument, except to say the moments in the movie that I think need to work and need to be true
are there.
Rang true for me.
All right.
They did.
Those are Blackstone broadheads. Razor sharp.
What kind of crazy person celebrates Noam Chomsky's birthday like it's some kind of official holiday? Why can't we celebrate Christmas like the rest of the entire world?
You would prefer to celebrate a magical, fictitious elf instead of a living humanitarian who's done so much to promote human rights and understanding? Okay, well, let's have a discourse.
Forget it.
No, explain. Take the opportunity to make your case. We're all open to hearing your arguments. If they're valid and you persuade us, I'm sure we'd all be willing to change our minds. Right?
Yeah.
Use your words.
That brings us to our final two categories, and we're going to kind of combine them here, Best Picture and Best Director, because I've always been one of those people who tends to sync them up. If you made the Best Picture, you were the Best Director.
I agree.
Is that how you generally go as well, Michael?
Usually, you know, I mean, some movies, it sounds crazy, but some movies are director's movies more than other movies,
yes.
You know, because, I mean, Gone with the Wind, always my paragon example in this case, in that, you know, how many good and great and you know, how many different hands ended up running that show for a while the real auteur, Selznick, you know, the producer, was sort of making the thing whatever it was. Not a film I love, but so be it. Yes, but in general, we should look at if a Best Picture nominee doesn't get a Best Director nominee, you do have to kind of ask the question why.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah, you definitely do. Well, the nominees quickly here for Best Picture are Arrival, Fences, Hacksaw Ridge, Hell or High Water, Hidden Figures, La La Land, Lion, Manchester by the Sea, and Moonlight. And then the directors of those Best Picture contenders, Denis Villeneuve for Arrival, Mel Gibson for Hacksaw Ridge, Damien Chazelle for La La Land, Kenneth Lonergan, Manchester by the Sea, and Barry Jenkins for Moonlight. So who will win? Who should win?
I think this has become, for me, just a matter of speculating why Spotlight won last year. Let me tell you why I think that. I mean, a film I really loved.
Yeah, it was your number one of that year.
Yes, very happy to see it. It's the beigest, drabbest looking film I ever think deserved the Best Actor nomination, just because it was right for that film. And,
sure.
And it's a, you know, the more the press, you know, and we're anybody in the media has to feel a little sensitive about the way the current administration has been just reaming the media and the press and, you know, enemy. Once you've been called the enemy of the people, then it's all bets are off. Sorry, but a film that you think back to a film like Spotlight and what it means and the actual authentic truth it told in a docudrama form about what, you know, those Boston Globe reporters accomplished in exposing the Catholic, you know, sex scandal. I mean, that's amazing. Good film. So why did that win? I think if we ever find out the truth, I wonder if Spotlight wasn't really just the strong second or third choice of a lot of different Academy voters.
Okay.
And suddenly you get this sort of consensus strong second or third choice. If that's the case this year, I wonder if something like Moonlight will, in fact, slide in to what I would be very happy to see as really one of the strongest Best Picture winners ever. I don't think it's going to happen.
Okay.
I hope Moonlight wins, but I think La La Land will win.
Yeah, I'm with you.
And for director, yeah, Chazelle. I mean, it's a success story they love. I think at this point, and since the film industry is right next door to the media that Trump's beaten up on, I think this is a time when maybe by reflex, a lot of the Academy voters will sort of say, let's put a good face forward on a happy film that sort of celebrates the industry, blah, blah, blah. You know, and look, I love La La Land, but there's a lot of cynical reasons you could vote for it that are less than aesthetic.
Yeah.
You know? But that's what I think. I think it'll be Chazelle and La La Land. But I would hope it would be Moonlight. And I would love to see Barry Jenkins.
Yeah, me too. Yeah, that's where I'm at. I hope that it's Barry Jenkins and Moonlight, but I think it's going to be Chazelle and La La Land. And I'm a fan of La La Land and Chazelle's directing, though I will say watching it for a second time, my first time in the theater, which I just did yesterday as we're taping this.
Yes.
I took my daughter Sophie to see it, Singing in the Rain, her favorite film of all time.
Right.
And she enjoyed this one too. it didn't.
A melancholy film for a young, for a young audience member.
Yeah,
you know, 11-year-old June came back a little bit shaken up by it.
Yeah, I don't think it quite had the joy that Singing in the Rain.
It's
ultimately
a melancholy
had
film. It's more like it's more like the Jacques Demy films.
Yeah, it is. And the reaction I had to it the second time was very similar to the reaction I had the first time. Nothing really changed in the sense that all the things that I really liked about it, I still really liked about it, and all the things I didn't really like about it, I still didn't really like. In the first category, the opening and the end sequences are still stunning. I do love, as minor as it is, the banter at the pool party that they have when they finally really talk to each other. Emma Stone and Ryan Gosling, I think, is very funny. I wish there were more scenes like that in the movie. And then that fight scene that I know we agree on,
Michael. Yeah, it's
Michael,
really good.
That's fantastic. And the less fantastic the movie is, somehow the more engaged I am by the film. I'm thinking of that scene and how it looks compared to all the other scenes of the film, how it's shot, how literally and figuratively the music stops that moment.
Yeah. Well, whatever, all right? I mean, it's time to grow up, you know? I have a steady job, this is what I'm doing, and now all of a sudden, if you had these problems, I wish you would have said them earlier before I signed on the goddamn dotted line.
I'm pointing out that you had a dream that you followed, that you were sticking to.
This is the dream! This is the dream.
This is not your
dream.
Guys
like me work their whole lives to be in something that's successful, that people like. You know? I mean, I'm finally in something that people enjoy.
Since when do you care about being liked? Why do you care so much about being liked?
You're an actress. What are you talking about?
Those are the scenes that somehow appeal to me more than some of the more fantastic sequences.
I completely agree. I think the first time I saw it, and the second too, it's the planetarium sequence. I think is striving too hard for a certain kind of magic. I think there's just sort of a structural issue where you have to take it or leave it in terms of the music basically dropping out of the movie for a lot of the middle part. And I got my Gosling issues completely with this thing.
Right.
I think as good as Emma Stone is, I think Gosling is pretty good.
Well, I'll admit that I did not think about it at all the first time I watched the film, but the second time I had you in my head, Michael. And
Thank
that
you.
Sometimes happens.
Thank you.
And I was really paying attention to Gosling's performance. And the thing you said is completely accurate, that it's all neck down, right? He does the steps.
Yeah.
But there's nothing happening
in
his face. And that is clearly a Gosling thing where he's just trying to be so nonchalantly, effervescently cool, which is a little bit of a thrill in of itself to watch, but compared to Stone and the work she's doing, I do prefer what she's doing.
Yeah, I mean, this film is really just, to me, it's like Emma Stone's real co-star is Damien Chazelle's camera, and that's why I kind of what I went for. But it's you look at something like that compared to something like Moonlight, where Barry Jenkins has essentially made, you know, a kind of an organically perfect thing.
Yes.
And it's that, you know, that's the one that really, at the end of the year, I just thought, this is it. This is it.
Well, I'm sure you're familiar with the Glenn Kenny line that is maybe a little bit unfair about Chazelle. His signature talent is making the difficult look difficult.
I don't agree with that. And Glenn hated Whiplash.
Yeah. He generally likes La La Land.
He does.
But he hated Whiplash.
As does Kareem Abdul-Jabbar in that fascinating piece.
Yes.
Kareem Abdul-Jabbar.
I want to talk about this.
Let's hear it.
Yeah, because this is a great piece. If you're not familiar with it, we'll link to it in our show notes. But Kareem Abdul-Jabbar, a noted civil rights activist, certainly has the bona fides to talk about this film and raise any type of provocative discussion you would want to have about it. And I want to talk about it because even though I fully acknowledge that, I guess I'm going to mount a little bit of a defense of the film, even though I certainly don't have the perspective on race that Kareem Abdul-Jabbar has. And even though I like to fashion myself as someone who's a jazz guy, I'm probably 1/20th of the jazz guy that he is. But he wrote this article and he said this: "I'm still delighted to see Ryan Gosling play a man devoted to the artistry of traditional jazz, but I'm also disturbed to see the one major black character, Keith, John Legend, portrayed as the musical sellout who, as Sebastian sees it, has corrupted jazz into a diluted pop pablum. Wait just a minute. The white guy wants to preserve the black roots of jazz, while the black guy is the sellout." So I have some thoughts. Did you have initial reactions
to it? Well, I want to hear your thoughts.
Well, and this is really more of a question. I'm throwing it to you. I'm throwing it to the audience. Why does it have to be Sebastian's way, Gosling's character, the pure way, is the only right way, and Keith's way, the pop jazz, if you will, is the wrong way? is that the argument that Damien Chazelle, as the writer and director, is actually making? I certainly recognize that Sebastian is the hero of the story and that his conviction is ultimately redeemed. His conviction to pure jazz is redeemed by the end of the film. But the music that he performs with John Legend in this film is not by any stretch bad music. And Chazelle very easily could have made it bad music if he wanted us to view it that way. All those musicians are very obviously real jazz guys, and their real jazz musicianship comes through in everything they play. And he gives the John Legend character a moment where he gets to make his case for the music that he's playing. And the case he makes for it is totally legitimate. He basically says to Sebastian, jazz musicians were always innovators, and being mired in the tradition the way he is isn't helping jazz at all. I think that's a very sound case.
Yeah,
and if he didn't want to give that side any credence, he wouldn't have given him those very legitimate words to say. So I think that Chazelle is open to both sides of it and isn't trying to make it as starkly black and white
in this case, as it is.
Now,
right.
Hurting my argument is the horrible scene that's the photo shoot that Sebastian's character has at a key moment in the film. He misses something that he should be at because he's at a photo shoot for Keith's group, and the photographer is making him do these ridiculously stupid faces, and it's a horrible denigration of anything jazz could ever be in that moment.
I kind of wish
it hadn't gotten so absurdly silly there, but remove that or look at the rest of it. There's plenty in the film, I think, to at least make the case that Chazelle isn't trying to make that simplistic an argument.
Right,
about
right,
jazz.
Right. I agree. I think that's true. I understand what people are saying, and Jabbar makes a very, I mean, it's
yes.
a really good review.
Yes.
It's very, and what I like about Jabbar's perspective on La La Land is that he says, I really enjoyed an awful lot of this picture, and it's not like he's got it. You could tell it made him, you know, seriously uneasy in some ways, but he was sort of entranced in others. And I think that's kind of the magic of the form, of the musical form. You can kind of, musicals work against your better judgment when they work for you, because it's all about suspending this, suspending disbelief and all kinds of things. But I guess I see the character of Seb, played by Ryan Gosling, as, you know, really just sort of a butthead. You know, I mean, he's not that noble a character. He's kind of by design, he's kind of a pill. He's sort of a mansplainer when it comes to jazz, or a white splainer, as other people have called him. And, you know, he's not meant to be, you know, all that kind of noble and grown up yet. I mean,
I agree. Yeah.
I guess a lot of what I take from La La Land is what Mark Harris, you know, the fantastic writer we've had on the show.
Yeah, on the show.
You know, he likes La La Land a lot without adoring it, but he likes it. And he says, you know, what you can really say about La La Land, it's a young person's movie. It only sees, and Jabbar writes about this too, it only sees its work versus love, career versus romance. That is it. And you cannot accommodate both. And this is what Jabbar's very interesting point is that why doesn't the movie envision a world where 30-somethings or anybody can actually pursue an ambitious career while trying to satisfy their romantic life?
Yes.
The movie says it's one or the other. Now, is it really saying that? I don't know. I don't think I agree, because there's a comparable moment in Whiplash, which I think is kind of brilliantly handled, where the Miles Teller character in Whiplash, the jazz drummer, is basically breaking up with his girlfriend, and all he's saying is a bunch of stuff, and the camera stays completely on her, that it is what he's saying is not endorsed by the film or the filmmaker. He's basically saying, I got no time for you, I got to focus on this, and you can tell he's being a jerk, and it's not really... It's
depiction is not endorsement. Is that where we're going here? In both
and I
cases,
think so. And
perhaps.
I think and La La Land is more. It's softer. It's a little less. You know, it's not as well wrought consistently. But it's. I mean that aspect of it. But I don't know. But I really do suggest people read that Jabbar thing, because it's what I love about it is that it's just a really sharp kind of mixed assessment of a film that needs that kind of voice on it.
Without a doubt. Now, one other question I wanted to ask you about La La Land before we go here. When I mentioned things that still stood out to me as maybe not working, one of them being, I still think it's lame that Seb's artistic integrity and his talent is constantly on display and being proven. Hers really isn't. She really gets short shrift, even though Emma Stone makes the best of it. But here's my question for you, Michael, and you can tell me if you completely disregard my premise to begin with. How do you justify the fact that in this big Hollywood musical, the singers and dancers, Stone and Gosling, are sixes out of ten at best?
I would invoke the Demi clause.
Okay.
If you go to the trilogy that people should see anyway, because they're kind of marvelous, Lola, especially Umbrellas of Cherbourg, and then Demi's third musical in this loosely related narratively trilogy a little bit, The Young Girls of Rochefort. But you know, medium singers, okay, talents. It's a different expectation. And I think, yes, it's easy to say, especially with Gosling, I think, because that's, you know, he's not a performer that really puts out in a musical. He's just trying to kind of get by on cool and, you know, kind of the way Marlon Brando sounded in Guys and Dolls songs and, and, you know, a decent dancer. And well,
sure.
But Stone, I think, is the one you can look to like, okay, a brilliant singer dancer? No. But I completely effective in this context. For me, yes. So and that's what other people would say about the Jacques Demy film.
Yeah, maybe so. Now, I did pose this question to our esteemed producer of Film Spotting, Sam Van Hollegren, because he's a smart guy and he's also seen La La Land now five times.
Five times. I've seen it like three or four.
Five times. So his answer to me was, first of all, he thought actually I was maybe being a little kind by giving them a 6 out of 10.
Okay.
But he still adores the movie, and he says back in the good old days, and this speaks to kind of where you were going, I think, Michael, you tell me if I'm wrong. He says back in the good old days, your most charismatic movie stars weren't just actors, they were singers and dancers too. In his attempt to evoke that era of movie making, Chazelle chose movie stars over singer dancers.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Well, yeah, and some of it's box office insurance, frankly.
That
I think
too.
Gosling probably helped get it made, and Stone, you know, I think in retrospect, helped make it great.
Yeah,
or nearly great.
Is it a better movie because it has their presence, their presences in the film, versus if it had two maybe less big talents, but they were better
like
technically?
Seriously, triple threats.
Yeah.
We'll never know.
We'll never know.
It's too bad. I did say in the review, you know, I frankly, it's too bad Miles Teller didn't work out. Because I think he's got a little more of the he's just got that slightly heightened stylized quality,
yeah.
You know. And look, he was in the remake of Footloose,
right?
Which
the only watchable part of that film,
and he's just sort of got something that it's just, you know, there's just a little more going on in his eyes. And I mean, I'm sorry, but you know, if you look at again Gosling, when he moves, all you're looking at is an actor trying to get the moves right. It's just like the 2 months he spent. And they were well worth it, you know, trying to learn the fingering on the piano.
And I think that's important.
Worked out great.
The movie puts a premium on that anyway.
Yeah, totally,
so,
totally.
Yeah. No, I'm with you. I didn't think about it the first time. The second time, I really was thinking, okay, I wish somehow in an alternate universe we could see the Emma Watson, Miles Teller version.
Yeah, yeah.
You know?
You wonder. And frankly, I think there's enough of the magic going on. And, you know, the script is okay for what it is. You can tell these guys cooked this up at a young age, and then it took a few years to make. But what Chazelle's camera sense is in a different league altogether. I think with Emma Watson and Miles Teller, it would have been very nearly the same degree of success. Who knows?
Yeah. Well, those are our Oscar picks. And we should note, because we occasionally get emails about this, people wondering about the movies we're talking about. In this case, not a normal top five. We're talking about Oscar films that most people listening are probably somewhat familiar with. But we do list all of our picks over at filmspotting.net. If you want to go review those, it's right there in the navigation under top fives. You can find all the movies we mentioned here in this Oscar show, and you can send your picks or any other comments about the show to feedback@filmspotting.net. Filmspotting.net is where you can find 12 years of reviews, interviews, and top fives in the show archives. While you're there, we encourage you to vote in the current Film Spotting poll, which Film Spotting Pantheon / Sacred Cow movie couple will be the Cinderella of this year's Film Spotting Madness. And if you haven't already, please check out the Film Spotting family of podcasts, The Next Picture Show and Film Spotting SVU. You can find both in iTunes or your favorite podcast app. Out in limited release this weekend. We're going to go through this quickly here, Michael, but if you've seen any of these and want to comment, please jump in. Dark Knight.
No.
This is Tim Sutton's follow-up to Memphis, which was Josh Larson's number two film of 2014.
Whoa.
Yeah, it's about events leading to a mass shooting at a multiplex. Dying Laughing is a documentary about the craft, creative process, and complicated lives of stand-up comedians. Kedi, I'm hoping, is the correct pronunciation of this doc, profiling the city of Istanbul through the eyes of 7 of its inhabitants, all of them stray cats.
Stray cats.
Now that's a hook.
That is.
I'm intrigued.
That's a stray cat strut.
It is. The Girl with All the Gifts, a film Josh has seen, and before he got sick, he was going to come on and recommend it, maybe even as our first Golden Brick candidate of the new year. We'll have to hear his thoughts on a future episode, but it's the debut feature from Colm McCarthy, who's a veteran of Sherlock over at the BBC. It's set in a dystopian future. What other type of future is there,
none,
Michael?
None.
Yeah, and it stars Gemma Arterton and Patty Considine. Also, zombies are involved.
Well,
dystopian,
I mean,
future, they have to be.
Might as well have some fun.
Yeah. Out in wide release, Collide, an American backpacker, gets involved with a ring of drug smugglers. It stars Felicity Jones, Nicholas Holt, and Anthony Hopkins. Rock Dog, when a radio falls from the sky into the hands of a wide-eyed Tibetan mastiff. Okay. What more can you say? It's animated with the voices of Luke Wilson, J.K. Simmons, Sam Elliott, and others. And Get Out, the horror film.
Yeah.
If you will, a directing debut from Key and Peele's Jordan Peele, recommended by Michael Phillips.
Yes, yeah, I'd like to hear what you guys have to say.
Well, you'll get those thoughts next week on the show, and we are celebrating Film Spotting's 12th anniversary.
12?
12 years.
Are you 12?
It's hard to believe, but yeah, no. March 6th was the first show ever published in the history of the podcast, and we are going into the mouth of madness. The 2017 Film Spotting Madness brackets will be revealed, and round one voting opens. And what we're going to do, Michael, we're going to round out the field with our picks for films that we think deserve Pantheon status.
I like it.
I think you'll agree with at least one of our choices.
Okay.
That's probably it, though.
Just the one.
Just the one.
Just the one.
One out of nine or ten.
Yeah, yeah.
That's as good as we can ask for. If you have thoughts on this year's Madness Tournament, the anticipated matchups, projected winner, if you just want to wish us a happy birthday, you can do that. Leave us a short voicemail, 30 seconds or so, and we may use it in next week's show. The number is available under the About Us tab at filmspotting.net. It is 312-264-0744. The show is produced by Golden Joe Dassault and Sam Van Halgren. Without Sam and Golden Joe, this show wouldn't go. Thanks to associate producer Candace Griffiths and the listeners of the Film Spotting Advisory Board, and special thanks to everyone at WBEZ Chicago. More information is available at WBEZ.org. Michael Phillips, thank you so much
for coming on the show. And to Josh Larson, hope you feel better soon.
Well, I don't know. I mean, this was fun. Maybe we could just do this every week.
Adam is wishing you continued low-level illness.
Yes.
But nothing life-threatening.
Yeah,
but
exactly.
But
well
show
put.
Delaying. Return delay.
There you go.
No, it's fun. Thanks.
Where can listeners find your stuff?
Well, they're going to have to find it at chicagotribune.com/movies. And they'll also be able to find it over this week. I'm on WFMT. Doing a little tribute to Oscar-winning musicals past and present, sort of on the hook being La La Land and the 14 nominations.
Yeah.
But we're kind of whizzing through everything from Broadway Melody of 1929 to American in Paris, West Side Story. A lot of fun.
For Film Spotting and Michael Phillips, I'm Adam Kempinar. Thanks for listening.
This conversation can serve no purpose anymore. Goodbye.
This isn't the first time I've been mistaken for a less hairy... Wait, hold on, let me try. And I'm asking this as a question?
Yeah, you're kind of like maybe this will be the line? Maybe this is what he could say, that kind of thing.
Oh, okay, got it.
Yeah.
Got it.
So I'll do
I'm
that.
Just going to say, how about?
Yeah, exactly, okay, that's
all right,
perfect.
All right, good, yeah.
Yeah. It's all ahead.
A more handsome Andrew Garfield.
On Film Spotting.
A shorter Jeff Goldblum.
Perfect.
Okay. All right.
All right.
I had to get Jeff Google.
I like it.
All right. All right.
Because you know that someone else compared you to last week on the show?
Oh, they always do.
Get that all the time?
They always fucking do. He's got the money. I just get the comparison.
Right. Uh-huh.
All right.
Okay, here we go. Film Spotting is listener supported. Join the Film Spotting family at filmspottingfamily.com and get access to ad-free episodes, monthly bonus shows, our weekly newsletter, and for the first time, all in one place, the entire Film Spotting archive going back to 2005. That's at filmspottingfamily.com.